You are listening to Mommying While Muslim podcast, where hosts Uzma and Zeba share their personal stories of mommying in a post 9/11 world. This podcast is designed with the Muslim American mom in mind, so grab a cup of coffee and pull up to their table.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mommying While Muslim podcast. This is Uzma Jafri.
And this is Eva Hassan. Uzma, how has your week been going with the decluttering and getting prepped for Ramadan? I know I have to get prepared, girl. I have to get prepared. So what have you been doing this week to prep you for that?
So I have been participating with you in the Muslima Decluttered group on Facebook. And every day we have challenges in order to, I think I have it right here. Challenges to declutter like a small space so it's not as overwhelming, and that way we can welcome our blessed guest during, you know, which is Ramadan. And so every day, credit to Isra Hashmi at Muslima Decluttered Facebook group, who actually had me on a live this week to kind of talk about my experience with my problem with hoarding and why that happens and how I kind of am trying to overcome it and start throwing away the expired stuff and the stuff I'm not, like, not being attached to the things, you know, like it's okay to have the memories, but the things are not the memory. You know, if it's that important, take a picture, write it down, toss it, you know, or send it on to complete its life cycle with somebody else, because Allah sent it to you. Maybe it's meant for somebody else now. And by withholding it from that person, you know, you're interrupting that item's life cycle.
I love that. And I'm super proud of you, because I know it is a little bit of a challenge for you. So the fact that you are letting things go, literally and figuratively, like, I am so excited for that.
Yeah. Tell me about your week.
So I think I started telling you, before we were recording, about this book that I'm reading, Fair Play, and it's essentially tackling some of these issues that we as moms are really dealing with right now with the pandemic, a lot before the pandemic, but primarily after the pandemic as well. And that's about, like, carrying this the burden of the unseen, all the little steps to get you to where you need to be. And part of the process of this is essentially, it's a game that I just purchased as well, that you and your spouse actually have to talk about. It's a good eye-opening situation to see how many cards you as an individual are carrying. And honestly, as your spouse is carrying as well. I didn't realize all the things that Zephyr was carrying. And I am fully admitting this out loud that, you know, he's carrying more than his fair share, but in seeing it in tangible physical form allows you the opportunity to have open and frank conversations. And especially as I am trying to find this new concept of a unicorn space or something that fills you personally with excitement and energizing opportunities, which is all the great things that, mashallah, coming up for Mommy While Muslim in the near future, I needed to be able to take some cards off of my deck in order to facilitate the time so that I can dedicate to some of the things that actually make me who I am as an individual person. So I am very much looking forward to that continued conversation. It's actually a week-long process. So we just started.
Okay.
Because you're not supposed to, like, talk about it all at one time. There's a madness to the method. But I know by the end of this, inshallah, we're not lovey-dovey, but by the end of this, perhaps we'll have a more open and frank conversation and appreciation for what the other is doing knowingly and unknowingly. So I'm really excited to participate in that. But how about you? What is our soapbox for today and this week? Because I know we have a good one to talk about.
Yeah, we have a good one. It's a passion of mine, but I do want to assure everybody in the audience that we will provide a link to this Fair Play game, because I really want to play it. It sounds a lot like our February challenge that is in our links on our Facebook and on our Instagram. We would love for you guys to participate in that. So the soapbox for today is about charter schools. So for those who don't know what charter schools are, there was a whole charter schools, when people are talking about vouchers or when they're talking about school choice, they're talking about typically charter schools. So what that means is that you don't attend the schools in your district necessarily, but you go to other publicly funded charter schools, and they get a charter from the state in order to provide free public education to students. Some of them do have like entrance exams, so they're allowed to do that. You know, it's not considered private just because you have an entrance exam. They say that they do this because a lot of times the public schools in certain districts are heavily underfunded, and as a result, the students don't have equitable access to resources, like, you know, whether it's extracurriculars or whether it's, you know, really useful STEM research and lab availability and all of that. So that was the really good intent that they had 20 years ago. I've talked about this on the soapbox before, how when I was 15 years old in speech and debate, Arizona was just starting to talk about school choice and the voucher system. And as 15-year-olds, we debated against it. And we said, this is not going to work because it will end up becoming an elitist system. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, worse than what we imagined happened. What has resulted as anybody can apply for a charter. Typically, those people know that there are funds available. And where are those funds coming from? From our public education. Like, we get an allotment for our state, right? So it's pulling out of that. The same money that is going to the public schools, the regular old public schools that we grew up with, is now getting funneled into the charter schools. So Arizona, where I live, is like number 48. When it comes to rankings, school rankings and education rankings in the United States. And that has moved very little from, I think, actually has moved down. We were 46 when I was 15. So now it's 48. There is a huge kind of a wave. The current attorney general, I'll give him props, man. He's a Republican and he's very anti-charter schools. I'll tell you why. Another charter school here has come under fire because they basically stole a lot of money from the state of Arizona from that chunk of public education funds. Their name is the Encino Schools, and their founders are actually two women. And they had a $500,000 fraud scheme that was busted, and they are being indicted for it. The attorney general also went after like two other schools. And so this is what's really interesting. In the article that we have, they don't release the names of the executives, one of whom is actually behind bars for defrauding the state of Arizona for $2.5 million. So this AG is going after these schools like crazy, because every time we send our kids to charter schools, guys, that public funding pot gets smaller, and that's less money that's going to our public schools. So are charter schools really helping public schools get better? No, they're actually making them worse. What I really hate about these charter schools, besides this stuff, well, I won't get into the stuff that I really hate them about. This stuff just makes me really angry, because this $2.5 million and this $500,000 that was taken by these executives for their own pockets was not distributed to the students to build more STEM, to send them laptops so that they could virtual school, to the teachers so that they could actually survive. No, it went into the executives' pockets, okay? I won't even get into who those executives are, but I'll tell you, typically they're not educators. They are business people. So this has become a corporate for-profit model. You guys know how I feel about, you know, these corporations and capitalism. I don't think I've left it to anybody's imagination, but, you know, DM me if you want to know. So this particular school that most recently got busted, even though they stole $500,000 from the state of Arizona, has only had to pay like $3,000-ish in restitution. It's just not working. Now, let me tell you what's worse. Over 100 charter schools just in this state applied for the PPP loans last year, and they got them. How many of us have friends who had to shutter their small businesses because they did not qualify for the PPP loans? Raise your hand. So this is fraud on a multi-level scale. And if you want to hear more about charter schools, I will give you a ton of links and you can read about them. If you're not a fan of public education, I can respect that, but I can tell you that the reason why public education has gone to pot in several states is because of charter schools. I stand by it. DM me if you have any questions. That's our soapbox for today.
as always, very eye-opening. I definitely appreciate it. Now I'm wondering if I should go into business and try to open up a charter school just to like...
You know what I'm going to do to you. I am going to reach through the screen and strangle you if you try to do that.
I was like, let's see how Uzma would respond to that. But, you know, from children's charter schools, we have to start somewhere. And we're talking about the Love and Marriage. We're still continuing our Love and Marriage series. I think we're closing out kind of the backwards with modern Muslim matchmaking, believe it or not. And of course, I was singing Matchmaker, Matchmaker from Fiddler on the Roof right before. And I really wanted to have that on, but I'm sure we'd get into a lot of trouble because I can't think of when I hear Matchmaker, that's what I hear. That's what I think about. I have no personal experience in this because we know that that's not how I didn't really have an arranged marriage, quite the scandal. But we did talk about arranged marriages several series ago. And you can hear about that. We'll post the links in our show notes to kind of lead you back to that episode. But we are a different generation. But guess what? Our kids will still not share all of our experiences because things are just going to be harder for them than they were for us. And not just because they were post 9/11 babies. Let's just be real. It's hard to find a match these days. And we want to prep our kids, as well as support our young adult Muslim sisters navigating these very, very muddied waters. And today we are joined by Tawakkaltu Busari of Hitched, a Muslim matchmaking service that doesn't require an app, doesn't make you swipe left or right during, you know, through all those endless barrages of potentials and does he like me and can we vet him and is he going to respond? No, no more surprises at the masjid when you're getting married or worse after the nikah. Because we've all been there too, sisters. Hitch provides opportunities for Muslim singles who are taking charge of their futures and finding their own spouses for very differently than the matched couples of our parents' generation. They're serving clients from any and all nationalities and ethnic backgrounds in the United States and Canada. We are so excited to have you on today and learn about your services, Tawakkaltu, for some of our divorced moms, sisters going back into the marketplace and for some of us mamas that have kids of marriageable age. Thank you so much, Tawakkaltu, for joining us today on Momming While Muslim.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Assalamu alaikum. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are super excited because when we found you, we were like, this is not the face of a matchmaker that we knew. So, you know, if you've been following the show, you know that I had like kind of an arranged marriage or a modern arranged marriage, but matchmakers were something that are people that my mom had started working with very early on in my situation and paid a lot of money to them. The way that they operated was different. And I think a lot of it is because they didn't look like me and they certainly didn't think like me. So when we saw you, we got super duper excited. And I'm trying not to jump up and down in my chair. Now, I know that you're not a mom, but typically when we have folks who don't have children on this podcast, we ask them about their experience with their mom, her influence on them and on their work. Can you share a little bit about that with us?
Yes, absolutely. So alhamdulillah, very grateful for my mom and dad, but we're speaking specifically to moms, mashallah. It's funny because when I initially had the idea of Hitch, as in to make it more organized, to, you know, put a much more professional spin on it, I sought consultation. I'd prayed, you know, I'd sought guidance. I'd pray to Allah to kind of bless this decision to go forward with it. And the first people I spoke to after that were my own parents and had no clue that my mom at one point wanted to be a matchmaker, as in help the community, help young youth, you know, find their potential spouse. And my dad also mentioned something very similar as well, back home in our native country. So my mom has been a very huge influence. When we even launched our first our first Muslim singles conference, both of my parents were on hand and my mom was kind of, she was my road dog during the process. So I feel very grateful for my mom. Alhamdulillah, I feel very blessed. And she, unknowingly is a lot of the reason why I'm doing matchmaking now.
Alhamdulillah, that makes me so happy. That makes me really happy that they're so supportive of this program. And, you know, they're not criticizing you or saying some of the sabotaging things that parents inadvertently say to their kids, especially to their single ones. I know I have heard the gamut, but there's some new ones that parents are saying these days that I'm finding out about online. So I appreciate you for being in the space and making it easier for our singles.
Thank you. Alhamdulillah.
So, you know, anybody that wants to get a matchmaker, we'd like to know some of the background and how you make Hitched happen. Like, how does it work? I'm coming in, not me, a generic person is coming in, they contact you and they're like, okay, Tawakkal to, I'm single, I'm excited, I'm ready to get married. Now what?
So then what happens is the priority is to learn more about them. So we gain information. There's a questionnaire that is submitted to them that they complete. And upon completion, then we're able to schedule an actual time frame to speak with that potential, with the single. And it's essentially an interview process whereby we're learning about their personality. And so that's what we ultimately try to gauge, because that's where the matchmaking begins, to be honest with you. If you don't know who you are dealing with in terms of personality type, and if you don't know what that particular personality type is looking for, there is no matchmaking process. And so that's where we begin.
So I just want to ask like a quick follow-up to that. What if the single doesn't even know who he or she is? Do you help them figure that out? Are there things that you suggest for them before, you know, because being married is such a big deal. And if you're in a situation where you don't even know who you are, how are you going to be half of a couple if you don't even know who you are? Is that something that Hitched helps with?
A blunt answer would be yes and no. So the yes component is, again, in the exercise, tapping into what they're looking for, their priorities. So when you know yourself, you'll know what your priorities are in life, and you'll know what your priorities are in a potential spouse. And it'll be easy for you, or easier for you, to articulate that. Now, when we do come across that individual who has not a clue, they don't know, you know, it's more of the cherries, the sprinkles on top that they're focused on, and they're not focused on, you know, the crux of the human that they're looking for. Then that's when one of two things happen. We take a step back and we say, hey, you know, perhaps at this point in time, Hitched is not for you. But then also there have been times where, you know, we ask people, take it back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Make sure that you're in a space whereby what you're asking of a human being to produce to you, you've asked the creator himself to produce for you. Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the things. Now, we don't offer the no component to my answer, my response. We don't have like a counseling segment for that, right? We don't have where, you know, somebody can receive counseling or receive coaching to further learn about themselves. And then another thing as well is we realize that Islam in and of itself has never stated or put a restriction on age to get married. There's no age requirement in Islam to be married, you know, and we know of our pious predecessors before us that were married in this day and age, what we would consider as children. However, one must be 21 and up, with the idea that by that age, you would have at least begun the thought process of who you are as an individual and wanting to be married, and who you feel will complement you best in your life journey as your spouse on this earth.
You know, we titled this Not Netflix Auntie. And I know, Tawakkal, you had some reservations about that title when we first brought it up to you, but it's because of that horrible show on Netflix, Indian Matchmaking, right? And that's like Netflix Auntie now. Mm-hmm. But everything that you're saying is so the exact opposite of what Netflix Auntie does, because your company is taking it back to Allah. You know, like making these people, these potential matches, the actual people and not their parents, think about what is your place in this world God has created for you, in this universe God has created for you, and who do you want to walk with over there? Mm-hmm. And I love that, because a lot of times, you know, at least parents of our generation, we're so busy preparing us for the rest of our lives with, you know, excel in high school, excel in college, excel in grad school, you know, get your PhD and you have to, you know, educate and learn. And then we're just going to get you married like that, you know, to somebody. Maybe we'll do our due diligence with like family trees or whatever and his education and make sure that he's going to be able to support you. But that's not what's going to, carry you through the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. It's if that person has that relationship and, you know, taqwa, that understanding of one God. Because if you don't share that, how can you spend the rest of your life doing something like that? You know, you can spend the rest of your life being a doctor or being a lawyer or being a teacher because you've gone to school for so long and have had so much experience. But in terms of preparation for our lifelong partner, we've done such a disservice to our children and our peers by not providing that. And I feel like your company probably leads them back more to that. Can you talk about, you know, while you don't refer people for counseling, for those people who haven't established maybe where they stand Islamically or ideologically, what you provide for them or where you refer them to?
So different resources, primarily books, certain things, like I'll give an example. When we hosted our first Muslim Singles Conference, one of our guest speakers that spoke, he spoke entirely about the love languages. He spoke about, you know, and in reading that kind of information, learning about that, you subsequently learn more about yourself, right? So it forces you, if you've never been exposed to the idea of love languages, then it forces you to kind of understand, well, what's my love language? And you're starting internally and then working yourself out. So those are some kind of the things that I have done and that we try to, you know, assist those people that we come across who are in that bubble of learning about themselves. Usually for the age demographic that we come across in that space, they're typically younger. They are the 21, the 22-year-old, you know, they're in college and they realize that at some point they eventually want to get there and be married, but they're not quite there yet. And it takes someone to inform them that, okay, this is kind of the space that you're in.
I just had a quick follow-up to that. As the ideal modern Muslim matchmaker that, you know, we find your company to be, to what culture, I guess, what I was hearing was that you're trying to match people by their, not just their mentality and by their intuition and understanding of themselves, mm-hmm. but also, you know, can you tell us about Islamic practice? Cause that's not something that traditional matchmakers ever really asked or cared about.
Absolutely. So that is something that we ask both in the questionnaire and we further follow up during the actual phone interview. So in the questionnaire, it's phrased as describe your religiosity, your level of religious practice. But in the interview itself, we are actually breaking it down in terms of the five pillars. We find, you know, where someone prays five times a day, they may not pay zakat, and zakat is something that's more of an afterthought until they're reminded of it. Whereas someone who, you know, mashallah, Allah has blessed them to perform hajj and umrah, but guess what? They don't pray five times a day, or they're at best able to pray three times a day. So we ask those questions during the interview to assess where they are, or where they describe themselves. But then we also gauge, like, what are your expectations in the type of spouse that you want to meet, in the type of spouse that you potentially want to marry. And I think that's important as well, because the last thing we want to do is unite two people who are completely polar opposite spectrums of religiosity. By virtue of that alone, there's absolutely no compatibility. We've wasted time, we've wasted emotions, we've wasted people's and money as well. So there are ways that we gauge this type of information. One of the things I love about Hitched, and what I really, really wanted to convey when starting Hitch, is the grassroots effort. The idea that there's actually someone out networking in the communities, various communities as best as possible, actually seeing and come across these individuals for themselves. You can learn a lot just by observation. Someone doesn't even have to open their mouth sometimes before you can figure things out. You know, so So in terms of speaking specifically to religiosity and the extension of your question, those are some of the measures that we've taken. And we hope that, inshallah, post-COVID, and when we're able to return back to meeting people physically and being in each other's spaces, that we'll be able to continue a lot of what we set out to do in the first place.
That's so great. And end of COVID, from your mouth to God's ears. Like, I think we're all ready for that. We are all ready for that. But the one thing that I, you know, as a mom of, you know, my oldest is not ready to be married. I joke all the time. I'm like, I'm going to get you married to somebody just because he's driving me nuts. But what are some of the things that we can do, like we can do to kind of prep them in finding the right partner? Because it's not just about being partnered, you know, it's about finding the person that will make you a better version of you, to not get in the way of you finding out who you are supposed to be. Like there are so many things that even with my daughter, I talk about it now, because I think we are so focused on the wedding and the party and the this and the that, that you don't realize that after that, that the first 24, 48, and sometimes in Desi weddings a whole week, you know, after that is done, you know, you are in a relationship, you are in a business on some level. This is why we started with a marriage contract with this person. So how do we prep our individual children to kind of get to that point where they understand that it's not just about the wedding day, it's about the lifetime hereafter?
Very good question. Very good question. I think one of the starting points is exactly what you just said, and communicating that to your children, that it's not about the wedding day. It's about, you know, the long term and walking this earth with this person in contentment and in peace. So I think it begins with communicating with your own children. And I don't know, you know, I too am the product of migrant parents. Oftentimes there's lack of communication. They're not really communicating to you, you know, what marriage is and, you know, what you should ultimately expect out of a marriage. And then combining that with the Islamic teachings of marriage and what makes a happy home, I think a lot of that, it needs to stop, you know. And ironically, oftentimes they say, I do have brothers, I also have a sister. You know, your sons will bring home someone who mirrors you as a mom, mm-hmm. you know, and at the end of the day, they do want to make sure that mom is happy or at least pleased with the person that they've brought home. But a lot of that is communicating to them, helping them understand what an ideal wife for them will be. Then also asking lots of questions, you know, asking your children, daughters and sons alike, asking them a lot of questions, you know, it can seem awkward. I don't have children, so it's not something that I myself get to, you know, partake in, but I do hope one day, inshallah, I will have that opportunity. But there's nothing like speaking to your children from a very early age, developing a rapport that they have this understanding. Yes, this is mom. There are boundaries, there's respect, but then there's a level of friendship as well. If anything, God forbid, should ever happen, or even good thing, minute thoughts that come to their brain, you would want them to come to you first, as opposed to the kid on the street who's only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows what they're exposed to. So I think a lot of this, in terms of the question, how do we prepare our children? You speak to them. You ask them lots of questions. You observe them. You know, a child from a young age will tell you a lot, you know, and as they approach their teen years, their early 20s, it's a good idea to get an idea of what their type is, you know, like who they would be attracted to, that kind of thing. And then realize that at the end of the day, whomever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has written for your daughter or son to marry, that you make it easy, that you don't be the problematic parent that puts all of these superficial, unnecessary burdens. No, he does not have to be a doctor. Doctors don't make the best spouses. No, she does not have to be fair skinned, because fair skinned does not mean that she can cook and that she can challenge you intellectually and that she will raise the type of children that you want to have ultimately. These are very important dialogues that you have from a very young age. And then you mirror that in the home as well. You know, for those who are blessed to have mom and dad, you know, still in the home and in very loving relationships, you let them know what that looks like.
No, I definitely appreciate that. Modeling is perfect. No, the one thing I do have to say is because I do talk about this, you know, we have been having these very frank and honest conversations. And the one thing I tell all of my kids is when you're looking for a spouse, you're going to look at a set of qualities that you want. But the reality is the people around you that love you will likely know more of what those qualities in a spouse that you would actually need, right? It's not about the wants versus the needs. So because of course, I mean, when you're in your 20s, it's all about, like you said, it's the looks. It's, do I have this physical chemical reaction? Is it, guess what? At year 20, at year 30, at year 40, when your skin is like starting to go down and your, you know, your hair is falling out, you want to know, is there something else there? And yes, that might be fun and exciting when you first get married, but ultimately what's going to have that longevity, that sustainability, that continued partnership is what comes underneath the physical. So I definitely appreciate that you're being open and honest to all that. Sorry, I just had that comment to say.
I don't know how I feel about that the people around you know what you need while you know what you want. So I'll have to sit with that for a little bit before I can comment on that part. But to what Kildo, you were talking about events that Hitched puts on in order to do its work. Can you tell us a little bit about what that looks like?
Yes. So definitely my favorite is the conference that we aim to host. The plan was to have it annually, and then COVID set us back quite a bit. So just trying to adjust and you know, invite appropriate speakers to be a part of that. That's perhaps my favorite. But other events that we've had, it's been a Ramadan iftar fundraising dinner. We've had volunteer sessions where we collaborate with a specific organization, and we bring, you know, we invite single Muslims to come out and volunteer. That's an awesome way to network and meet other people, singles in the community. And those type of events you can't host virtually, right? You can't host like an actual volunteer come out, get your hands dirty. You're sifting through clothes or you're, you know, whatever the task entails. It's hard to have those type of events virtually. So, you know, inshallah, we're just hoping that we'll be able to get back on track. But those are the ideas. We have strayed away from the painful speed dating type event.
Speed dating. Oh. Yes. I hate that.
we've, you know, and not to knock them entirely or at all. You know, there have been people who found their significant other, stuttering over here. Their spouse is that way, but we just don't feel that it's the most productive. The idea of tying, giving back to humanity, serving a good alongside other Muslims that are single in the same boat, I feel, is much more productive, and it provides a much more safe and calming space as opposed to your speed dating type, event. And I think sometimes some people walk away feeling less empowered from those type of events.
I agree with that.
So, you know, this, I think, segues into my next question, because I want to know why traditional matchmaking doesn't work for second generation Americans and beyond, like our, you know, like our generation and our children and our grandchildren. And by traditional matchmaking, I'm speaking to the old school, here's a picture, here's the resume, if you get a resume, of like just family tree and education and maybe some financial information.
Yes. So I think I will say, like, the idea of the Rushta auntie per se, speaking specifically to that, is very specific and unique to, you know, a culture. And so whereas in your Indian, Pakistani communities, Bangladeshi communities, you'll find that approach. You may not find that approach with Muslims in West Africa, as compared to in East Africa, and then, you know, North Africa, and then of course the Middle East, so on and so forth. I did have the opportunity to watch that you know, the show, the documentary on Netflix, and I think what I have to consider too is that that is not religiously, it wasn't religiously approached. So there's no element of Islam. There's really no, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of, I think that plays a huge factor in this. The reason why I say that is because we as Muslims, even though we are not aware of it, the shaitan just has a way of creeping into situations and taking over our brains and how we think and how we process things. So whereas we might see something happening within a specific culture or community, and from the outside looking in, it looks glamorous, it looks great, we don't realize the fitna that is attached with that as well. And so I think why I even mention that is because your question was, why is it that, you know, matchmaking approaches from the past have not been working and are not working currently? I think it has to do with that. I think it has to do with emphasis on dunya and what people have and what they can potentially bring to a marriage, as opposed to deen, assessing personality, assessing where someone thinks spiritually, and making that the focal point of a marriage and bringing children into the equation. So for that reason, you find a lot of people connecting. The selling point is, oh, he comes from this family. The selling point is he is a doctor. The selling point is, you know, all of these other things that have absolutely nothing to do with religion and spirituality. And I noticed that when I had the chance to watch the Netflix show, I picked up on that. And I think that those types of things, it has a way of trickling into more Islamic spaces and more Islamic homes, that, okay, you have this couple, they're not Muslim, but, you know, both husband and wife are doctors. And then we tend to want to mirror that. And we see the outside glitz and glamour and success, but we don't see, you know, the horror and fitna sometimes that stems from that.
And by fitna, that's just like conflict typically associated by the work of shaitan or Satan, as you were talking about earlier. I think it is also not just because of wanting to mirror the cherries on top or the sprinkles, as you said, it's also because second generation and native born Muslim Americans have a more distilled Islam and a more authentic Islam than their predecessors, because their predecessors were, their practices were probably, at least from the subcontinent, have a lot of influence from non-monotheistic sources, non-Islamic sources. And so it's a lot harder to compel them to listen to and look for or share those values that generations thought were more important. So I just wanted to add that.
And that's a very good point. That's a significant component in terms of matchmaking. The conundrum, if you will, is you look at our marriage, you look at marriages of our parents' generation and the generation before them, compared to divorce rate to now. Why is it the divorce rate is higher now as opposed to back when? So I definitely see where you're coming from. And I do want to share that sentiment, but I also think that, I think that overall, the lack of the spiritual journey, the spiritual connection, the tapping into the spirituality on the individual basis, and then, you know, as it pertains to the person you want to marry, I think that's where, you know, things have just gotten unnecessarily tough.
Is what can we do? Like you mentioned divorce, and unfortunately the divorce rate in our population is going up. And it might not be just because, you know, maybe back in the day they did it better, or maybe they felt like they didn't have a choice. Right now, we as a society, the women are sometimes the primary bread earners in their households, and yes, we have more choices and we're more picky. What are some of the things that we can provide? Does Hitch, first of all, provide any kind of matchmaking services for our Muslim moms that have unfortunately gone through a divorce and are ready, you know, that wouldn't be me, but are ready to jump back into the matchmaking world?
Yes, our service is absolutely open. We do not discriminate on account of anything other than being less than age 21, to be frank. And so if anyone is interested and they feel like they're ready and they're comfortable, they're more than welcome to reach out to us. And, you know, the starting process is we begin just by getting to know who they are, you know, a little bit of their background and learning what it is they're looking for, their expectation in their spouse. And we take things from there.
Thank you so much. I really love hearing about this.
Just going back to the conundrum of why did it last longer, even though, you know, spiritually it wasn't, you know, spirituality may not necessarily have been the focus. I think it's because prior generations had more of a commitment to duty and responsibility, keep calm and carry on. And there was a lot of self-sacrifice involved, because a lot of times you got married for family honor, family wealth, family. And it was, you know, the greater good was more important than the individual. And I think certainly in the West, we have a focus on the individual. However, those prior generations probably looked down on that. Whereas, you know, and I can see in some situations where they're correct, where there's too much emphasis on the individual. But I truly believe that there's a happy medium where the individual can be preserved and their passions and strengths can be preserved without, you know, feeling like they're throwing themselves on some kind of funeral pyre of marriage. Like, I don't think that that's necessary. I think that that's what happened before. And I fully recognize that the divorce rates are higher, but I think it's because people realize that they have the right to be happy and that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives them the right to divorce in our religion. And so they're going to seek it somewhere else. And, you know, I don't know how to justify or explain that or make it sound rosier. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
There's definitely no way to phrase it that's going to make it sound rosy. I just, I look at my grandparents before Allah took them. May Allah have mercy on them. I mean, and forgive them of their sins. I mean, you know, I look at what my grandfathers did, both of them, and they were not, you know, by today's standards, they would not be considered white collared professionals. But to the women that they married, they were like everything, you know? And now, again, there's a shift of having what's on paper that looks good. And so I absolutely agree. This is something that you see now. Women have realized that some of these situations that the women before them have endured, they do not have to. But what concerns me is it's only getting tougher, right? It's only getting harder and harder to find that person that you want to marry, because everything is filtered. Everything, it has to look a certain way. It has to. And I think oftentimes a lot of these things, going back to the original question of matchmakers before, you know, of the past and versus matchmaking now and the generation that we're dealing with now, perhaps their emphasis on the person having a degree or having all of these accolades or being of a certain family were things that they themselves missed and felt like it was really important to have, making heavy emphasis on that and forgetting, you know, the love, the connection, and, you know, those types of things. So, I mean, those are just my thoughts. You know, every day I have a new theory for different things. I definitely, what I don't want is there for this major calamity to happen. And then all of a sudden we wake up and we're like, oh, you know, why couldn't we have caught this sooner? Oh, you know, and then we find our children to come in a completely different situation and conundrum. And we quite clearly don't know how to guide them at all, if that makes any sense. So,
no, it absolutely does. And I mean, to that end, when we're talking about these generations, these second native, you know, whatever, third, fourth, the generations to come, you're already seeing or hearing some problematic things, when whether it's in the questionnaire or in your live interviews. Can you talk about some of those unrealistic expectations, some of those like red flags that you hear that tell you that either this person is not ready or is not appropriate for your database?
Yeah, absolutely. So red flags definitely is when, you know, many times there are Muslims who come to us, they have not had the opportunity to experience any type of relationship outside of mom, dad, siblings, and friends, right? No romantic type of situation. And ideally, like from an Islamic perspective, that is the ideal. That you would not have had any real, you know what I mean? Like real romantic type relationship, unless it was someone that mom and dad kind of facilitated. It was known. There was an intent of marriage. Ultimately, things go wrong. Things, you know, people change, situations change. So that's understandable. But when an individual has had, you know, a prior relationship, they've walked that journey with someone to get married and it didn't work out. And the reasons for things not working out is solely on the other individual. That's a problem. You know, right. We all make mistakes. We all have our own, we're nuanced individuals. So we all have things that can either bring to or take away from any type of relationship. So I find it problematic when I speak to a brother or sister and it's blame, and negativity on the other person. That's a sign that things are not well. That could be a sign that this person may not be in a space to be receptive to someone else coming into their life. Examples of cherries and sprinkles on the top, as opposed to focusing on the, you know, the core of the individual, is when, you know, there's no mention of the person's spirituality. There's no mention of, you know, I'd like I'd like my wife to pray. I'd like my wife to, you know, observe some conservative form of or modest form of dress, or, you know, rather than that, it's, you know, the green eyes, you know, like she's just not going to be a wife unless she has green eyes. She's not going to be a wife unless she has colored eyes, or, you know, heavy emphasis. And I find this more in the younger clientele as opposed to older clientele. Height, you know, for the height requirement. Oh, he's got to be of, you know, this height. He has to be at least 6 foot tall. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, you as an individual who's 5'3", 5'4", I can understand how you would want your potential children to have height, but you have to understand that this does not, you know, height has absolutely nothing to do with the quality of spouse you're going to have. Absolutely nothing. And so sometimes we've had to turn away people point blank. We've had to say, you know, we don't feel that we will be able to assist you. You know, there does seem to be unrealistic expectations on, you know, who you're looking for as a spouse. And the last thing that we want to put ourselves in, a predicament as matchmakers is that you're constantly finding this person has described what they're looking for. You find it. And then it's, you know, it becomes a swipe left in a different form. You know, it becomes a no after a no, after a no, after a no. You're going to question like, okay, what is this person? What is their objective? What is it that they're ultimately trying to do? So, those are a few that we've had. And, you know, the remedy becomes letting that person know. You know, sometimes people have behaviors and they're not aware, they're not made aware. And so you let that person know, but then you also communicate that we can't be of assistance to you. And the last thing we want to do is bring in some, you know, someone who's sincere, someone who's ready for marriage and they've been looking for it a long time to introduce them to you. And, you know, all hell breaks loose. So.
No, I appreciate that. Like, I think it's so, so important. Like when you know, because in our day-to-day, we hear those red flags all the time. And sometimes, you know, in our spaces, we hear them coming out of the mouths of mothers and we're like, you know, this is not going to end well for this couple if they ever get together. But that's why I think people like you are really important to the in the space. And I really appreciate that you are. We're certainly going to include in our show notes the link to hitchsoon.com, which is the website for Hitched. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to referring people to you when the time comes and hope you're still around when it's our kids' turn. Yeah. Any final thoughts before we close out today?
No, I just want to say thank you so much for the opportunity to come and speak to your audience. And, you know, hoping if anything that the goal is not to have more clientele and have more people reach out to us to utilize the service. The hope is that people will just kind of tap into their own selves, understand who they are as an individual, and look to Allah. You know, like one of my best interviews of a client that I had, it wasn't at some point it shifted away from an interview and it just became a dialogue of, you know, like, hey, have you heard of this? Or have you tried this? Like, you know, connecting to Allah and that light bulb going off, like, oh my God, I'd never even heard about that, you know, like as a means to getting what I want. It all starts with Allah. It ends with Allah. And there's hope for everybody. You know, never feel like you're in despair. Never feel like there's no hope for you, but really and truly it's connecting to the one who created us all in the first place.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming today and sharing all of your gems. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Thanks again for joining Zeba and Uzma on Momming While Muslim today.
Please email us your thoughts or questions and follow us on Facebook and Instagram because this podcast was designed to cater your needs.
Make sure you check out the show notes to find the links and resources for this episode. And remember to help a mama out and leave a review of the show as well as to like it on your podcast app of choice because that helps us grow.
Tune in next week for another episode of Momming While Muslim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.